Hello and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires that we call the internets is Joe, Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
I'm depressed.
Oh, what happened now?
Nothing.
Oh, I didn't
win the Powerball. I didn't win the Mega Millions. One person won each of them, which I think is brilliant. Although not all the time. Because occasionally there was like, once there was a guy out in...
Is this a dirty limerick?
Nope. It's not even a sea shanty. It's just he had won the Powerball, but he was already like a multimillionaire. So he donated it all to his church.
Oh.
Which is kind of classy, but you're also kind of like, well, why the F does a guy like that even need a $1 million?
Probably just bought it for fun.
Although my other one is great because apparently I think this was Upper New York. They were investigating a guy for money laundering. And then he went in, apparently him and his, I'll call them friends or maybe co-conspirators, don't know for sure, won the Powerball. And then they're like, well, there goes the case for money laundering. Hey, what'd you do with this $100,000? That was just some of my Powerball. So, but no, we haven't won. I will appeal to the two that did win that if you do want to get Corey and I a Wikipedia page, we would appreciate it.
Yes. And they're free, by the way.
Oh, sure. I don't tell them that. Hundreds of thousands of dollars. So the question I always come
thousands
up with.
Thousands and hundreds of dollars.
If you want, well, we've talked, I think, in the past about winning lottery. I think we have, haven't we? Have we talked about it online?
Oh, yeah.
You know, because, of course, what's the number one thing you do?
Get a lawyer?
Nope, for that.
Change your phone number?
Nope. You wake up in the morning, you discover all your digits, and you just won a ton of money, whether it's 20 million or a billion. What's the first thing you do?
Quit.
Nope. Sign your frickin' ticket.
Oh,
which
yeah.
If your name is on it, it's yours. Doesn't matter who finds it. You know, like if somebody took it out of your house or, you know, you gave it to the lawyer and he suddenly disappeared. Once your name is on it and your address and everything, that becomes your ticket. So when it gets turned in and say lawyer Schmuckety Duck has your ticket and it, well, this is signed to Corey Strode. It's his ticket. You got to bring him in. And there's been stories, too, where people, have lost marriages over it because like the spouse wins, signs the ticket and then disappears. And it doesn't quite work that way because even if you did decide to dump your spouse after becoming a billionaire, you're still going to, oh, baby, you're not some Hollywood mom or some, you know, guy who schlepped a porn star while your wife was pregnant. Doesn't work like that in the real world. But I always wondered, Corey, in the world of comic books, you won the Mega Millions, Powerball, whatever. So you're pretty much set forever. What would you do comic book related? I mean, what would you buy? Would you donate? Would you just, you know what? I'm going to buy a house, and this half of the house is going to be my comic library. This is my omnibus room, which you probably have to be reinforced, obviously, because your houses can only take so much. What kind of things would you do? And then,
well,
or if you want, I can go first because I've thought about this a lot.
You go on and on about this. Me, I've always said that I would find a place. I'd take a year and just travel. And I wouldn't say I'm going to go here. I would just wander wherever. I'd probably buy a new car and just go somewhere.
I'm thinking more specifically with comic. I mean, would you like go visit comic stores and go, yeah, I've never been to Mile High. Let's drive down to Denver, stop at everything that looks interesting and see what I can buy.
I would probably go to some of the big comic shops. I would go to the comic museums. there are a few of them around. I know Steve Geppi has one. I would actually like to go over to Europe to some of their comic conventions.
Geppi closed it.
Because you've heard about the comic conventions they have in Europe, right?
Mostly through guests and Angel and I don't know if Dana got to one. I don't think she got to one while she was in Italy.
But they're very different from ours. Although the cosplay scene in Europe is getting huge. There are a couple of cosplayers I follow on Instagram, and before the world shut down, they were going to these conventions, and they would have their thing that they do on stage in costume, and you'd see out in the crowd, and it was like a concert. They had light, they had lights and music, and the crowd was huge, and I think it'd be fun to go to those. But when I got back, first thing I do comic wise is create kind of a boutique comic shop that we've talked about in numerous episodes. But for myself, I'd get a nice house and set up a library, where I could access my comics easily, which I think after you get to a certain point, accessing your comics becomes the hard part. And then, all the books in one other end, and I'd be set.
I think they're almost the same thing. Part of my comic book fantasy is it's all part of my comic book fantasy. And I ain't talking Eros comics either. I'm thinking like I said earlier, I'd probably, if I did get a house, make it more comic booky so I could actually access my stuff. I mean, like I said, one of the things, I'm sitting here in the basement and I'm surrounded by about 10,000 comics, DVDs, toys, whatever, books. I have no idea how to get to anything. I have a general idea where stuff is, but digging through it would be tough. I mean, I've always wanted to have a library the way they talked about in The Great Gatsby. It's real books. Somebody come walking in and there's Essentials, the omnibuses, when they all look, you put them all together and the spines look alike, they look pretty impressive. I don't know if I would go crazy buying comics because, like you said, a lot of it's online. I'd probably get myself a pretty decent online viewer, so I could actually enjoy looking at stuff instead of, okay, let's explode this panel up so I can read the lettering and... because 8-page, what is it, 6-panel, 12-panel, so page doesn't really translate well on a computer screen when it's horizontal instead of vertical. I do like the idea of traveling, and of course, wherever I travel, I'd have to pick up comics. One thing I always wanted to do is what I call the 1,000 plan, is just like walk up and down, I don't know, say like University Avenue. Stop in every store that looked interesting and buy $1,000 worth of stuff. As a small business owner or former owner, that's a lot of clams. If somebody could have just walked into my shop and dropped $1,000, I'd have thought I won the lottery myself. Hell, I was happy if somebody I never knew walked in, dropped $100. Definitely locally, I'd probably run around and just go nuts, buy as much as I can, try to get these guys back on their feet from all the COVID and weird announcements and stuff. One plan I always did have was to reopen a comic shop. And then I would talk to you, Corey, and the other employees and say, okay, what do you need? What do you need to live on in terms of benefits, in terms of salary? And just say, I'll meet it. So quit your HR job, if you want to keep doing the overnight thing, that has its own rewards and downfalls. Is that basically just hiring you full time? You're set. You're going to get full benefits. You're going to have a retirement plan. You're going to have whatever your salary is. When Mike Edmondson passed away, that thought, I don't think as much of that as I used to, because he would be one of the guys that I'd really want, you, I don't know if Brent Moore would be interested, because he was a toy guy. He knew his toys. He'd be kind of like the toy guy. But just that idea, it's always there, but it's not necessarily the forefront of my imagination. A couple of the things I would like to do, I would go to the MCVF and say, guys, I want to set up a grant, or it would be more of a trust, where you have this set of money and you use it to make your con, and then the money regenerates every year so that you don't have to worry about how are we going to afford to do this. And only one real stipulation: you're going to pay to bring in one guest. You know, they've been lucky because they got a lot of guests that come in, and they have people that work a lot trying to find creators to come in. But that would be the one caveat, because right now they don't pay for guests, and they're being kind of left behind because, you know, in order to get the hot guests, now you're going to have to pay them, not because they're egotists, but because they got to get paid for their time. Otherwise, they'd be out creating comic books where they do get paid for their time. So I guess I understand that. I'd also do similar thing for the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, the Hero Initiative. I'd probably just say, here's $1 million. Just donate $1 million. If I could do it anonymously, I could. Because I think that's the big thing, like we've talked about. You know, you win that type of scratch, you gotta basically fall off the grid. And I think in one of them, the one that was won, was it the Mega Millions? One of them, one of the two, the person who won it doesn't have to, that can remain anonymous. I don't think it was Michigan. Michigan was the Powerball. So can you imagine, the person who won the Mega Millions, I believe, can go anonymous.
No.
You'll never know who it was. Not every state's like that. It's a state law. And, of course, I don't necessarily think the Powerball guys like it, because they want to be able to say, look, this person won it. I do have one minor freaking on the whole thing, other than, you know, my stack of tickets here that, always double check. Well, that's the thing. You got to always check your ticket, because you may have won a lesser prize. Maybe $7, but there was somebody one year who had a $100,000 prize, never claimed it. And I believe you have up to a year to claim it. And they never did. So always double check your tickets. And play again. Probably will when it gets up there again. Like I said, I've gotten away from buying them every week. But it is fun to dream.
When I went to work Friday night, I stopped at the gas station to get soda because I desperately need soda when I wake up in the morning. Mm-hmm. I hate the taste of coffee, and I need the caffeine to get started. So I walk in, I have my two bottles of soda, and the guy's like, how many Powerball tickets do you want? How many Mega Millions do you want? And you can see in his eyes that's all he'd been doing all day.
Oh, yeah. They don't necessarily like it.
No. When I worked at Schindler's, that was when the lottery started in Minnesota. I think it was, 1990? It was either 90 or 91. And they started for the first year with just scratch-off tickets. And we had those. And the security involved in those. So much stuff you had to do. So, you know, all these records you had to keep and everything. And Schindler's really didn't want to have to pay out. They gave us this this written thing about where, you know, somebody comes in to cash in a ticket, we would make it as hard as possible so that they would go somewhere else to do it. Schindler's not really, you know, customer friendly and on the up and up on a lot of things. But the only reason they did it was they wanted the Powerball, because Powerball, you sell so many more Powerball tickets.
Oh, yeah.
And then a year later, they announced the places that would get the Powerball, and it was based on how many lottery tickets you'd sold during the year. Schindler's didn't get it. The next day, all lottery tickets are gone.
I'm shocked.
They were like, we're not, nope, nope. We don't get the Powerball. Screw these guys.
That's funny. I always tell the guys at the holiday where I buy them, I said, just remember, you get a piece of the action. I said, we're going to have a party you had like you never had before. Probably same thing at work. I told my boss. Because when the Mega Millions, I think, when I was on the road, really went up in, I think it was 800 million that time. I just told my boss, I said, yeah, if I don't show up for the bus at 3 a.m, go to the airport, don't even ask. I said, I'll be somewhere between here and Minnesota. Just don't even ask. Well, obviously, I showed up, and as I was getting on the bus, he kind of, you didn't win, did you, Ryder? Sharp as a tack.
Well, when I used to work in the office, I would leave and, you know, instead of saying goodbye, I say, you know, say, well, be back tomorrow unless I get a better offer. Now, you wanted to talk about deep cuts.
Deep cuts.
I have one of the most obscure, one of the most bizarre.
Let's explain now, but, you know, because we keep, what we do is we keep changing the names of these things we do every time. So deep cuts are basically where Corey and I just pull a random comic out of our collection, read it, and talk about it. And it also jives into our secondary mission, which is to mention every single comic book that's ever been published, other than grabbing something like the Overstreet Price Guide and just reading the titles. We want to talk about it.
I have a deep cut that doesn't come from comics. I found out about this week, and it blew my mind, and I think it's going to blow yours. Joe, you like the movie Blazing Saddles, right?
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember the TV show?
I remember there was, although I did not watch it.
Do you know how long it lasted?
Probably 2 episodes and went away.
4 seasons.
4 seasons.
It lasted 4 seasons. It was called Black Bart. However, only 1 episode aired. And now you're going to find out the rest of the story. When Mel Brooks was making Blazing Saddles, Warner Brothers was very, you know, they were high on this. They thought it was going to be a hit. They were already kind of talking about making a sequel. And this was back when, you know, now when you make a movie, there's always a deal for making sequels and people are involved in the sequel. But back then, you didn't have contracts for sequels. Most sequels weren't with the, you know, original creators and stuff. They were usually just a cash grab. So in his contract, Mel Brooks said that Warners could not make a sequel unless within 6 months of the movie coming out, they did a TV series. And Mel Brooks thought, you know, that'll kill it. That'll make it so they don't do it because there's no way they could turn this into a TV series. Absolutely no way, et cetera, et cetera. So 4 years later, Warner Brothers announced that they were going to be making at least 1 and possibly 2 sequels to Blazing Saddles. And Mel Brooks and his lawyer, they filed an injunction. And Mel Brooks was invited to the Warner Brothers lot. And they brought him into a screening room. And they showed him not just the pilot for Black Bart, but that they had been making this show for 4 seasons. Because nowhere in the contract did it say that the show had to be aired anywhere. Now, they did show the pilot on TV, and the pilot is actually on the Blazing Saddles, one of the special edition DVDs. Lou Gossett Jr. played the Cleavon Little part. Steve Landisberg played the Gene Wilder part. It was made dirt cheap. You know, the pilot doesn't look dirt cheap, but after they made the pilot, they just shot it all on a soundstage. From what from what Lou Gossett Jr. has said about it, was that really after a couple episodes, there weren't even really jokes. It was just banter. And every year he would show up and they would film, you know, a number of episodes. And the number of episodes isn't really known, but he would film episodes. And it was never aired anywhere, and Warner Brothers never tried to sell it anywhere. It was just there so they could make sequels to Blazing Saddles. Now, by the time all the legal stuff was done and everything was done, basically the shine was off the rose, and they could tell that people had moved on, and they never did make that sequel to Blazing Saddles. But I'd heard bits and pieces of it over the years, and this week I actually saw a video where someone went in who had worked on the show and knew about it and just walked through the whole story and showed clips from the pilot and had some stuff from interviews with the actors who'd been in it, and my mind was just blown that in Warner Brothers' vault somewhere there are 4 seasons of a Blazing Saddles TV series.
Odd.
So I've one of the things that I've started to do, you know, you go down rabbit holes when you're on the internet. Other people go into these political and conspiracy theory rabbit holes. I go into these rabbit holes of lost media and lost entertainment and things like that. So I went down a rabbit hole this week. You were talking about deep cuts. The Hanna-Barbera cartoons. Now, when they first were on the air, they, of course, because they were out in L.A., they went through Gold Key and were Gold Key comics. And then when Gold Key started to run into trouble, Carlton got the license in the 70s. And you've probably seen those. They're god-awful. They're just awful. But in the late 70s, Marvel got the rights. And what Marvel did, they brought in Mark Evanier to be the editor because he had comic experience. He'd also worked in with Hanna-Barbera. And he brought in people, and they did the books. And while they didn't sell real well here in the U.S., they did really well overseas. So what it was, it's Hanna-Barbera would kind of keep the rights to the comics. Marvel would print them, but then they would also license them overseas. But then when that fell apart, they kind of went away, except after Richie Rich and Casper and all those had been canceled by Harvey, got the rights. So here is my deep cut. So, Jay, just have short stories, and it is all new comic special from 1993. Let's see, who is in this? Okay, it starts with the Flintstone story, because they have Yaki Doodle on the cover. There is a short Scooby-Doo story, a Jetsons short story, a Yogi Bear story, a Wacky Races story, and then it says in upcoming books you will get Top Cat, Magilla Gorilla, Huckleberry Hound, Quick Draw McGraw, Adam Ant, and Secret Squirrel. And the thing that I need to dig into, Harvey Comics Entertainment and Turner Publishing are proud to introduce an exciting new series of comic books based on the classic all-time favorite Hanna-Barbera cartoons. This all-new series will bring the world-renowned Hanna-Barbera characters back to comic books for the first time in more than 2 decades, with its updated contemporary style, these dynamic stories and illustrations promise to turn a whole new generation to the Hanna-Barbera cartoon classics. Premiering in spring 1994, the Flintstones, Jetson, and Scooby-Doo will be featured in their own monthly series. Hanna-Barbera All-Stars will contain a variety of stories starring such favorites as Yogi Bear, Huckleberry Hound, and Quick Draw McGraw. Hanna-Barbera Presents will feature different character each quarter, including Top Cat, Secret Squirrel, the gang from Wacky Races, and many, many more. And I don't even know if any of those books got published. So I'm going to go to the Bible, the Overstreet Price Guide.
Yep, yep.
And why don't you dig up your first deep cut while I look up to see if any of these books came out?
All right. My first deep cut, and let's see, started out as usual, the way Carlton does. It started out as one title and then eventually changed into another. Originally, it was Wild Frontier, a Western started way back in 1955. And then in 57, they introduced at issue number 7, and help me with pronunciation here, Corey, Cheney Kid, if that sounds right.
The Cheyenne Kid?
Cheyenne, that's it. See, I don't even know this guy. Yes, Cheyenne, Cheyenne.
Yep, the Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Ah, because I know there was a Dell photo cover, so it must have been a movie or a series somewhere. Now, up until then, they had Davy Crockett, Daniel Boone, Jim Bowie, all sorts of guys like that. Giordano.
So,
thank you. I'm just fumble lips today. He did a lot of the art. After 7, they just changed it to the Cheyenne Kid. And the series continued on all the way through issue 99, which was the final issue. And that was in 1973. The issue I found that I have in my collection is issue number 92. It's one of the few where I actually know who did it. It was Joe Gill did the art and Sano Kim. I'm sorry. Joe Gill did the story. Sano Kim did the art. Now, for the most part, a lot of these stories are just whatever, humdrum, just kind of. I don't know. It's just they're not good. You know, ads are kind of fun. You know, 7 foot size monster, 7 feet tall for $1, or you can get the karate jujitsu book for $1, or the secret book safe. You know the drill. All those fun things. Inside the military man, she deserves genuine diamonds from National Diamond Sales. So somebody must have been buying these because of the old on the back. Never finished high school? Now you can get a diploma without going back. There's a Hush Puppies ad. You can manage all the stars with Strat-O-Matic Baseball. At Strat-O-Matic Game Company, just send a free brochure samples with 10 cents to cover postage and handling. Some of the other Carlton comics that were being advertised at the time, Geronimo James and Billy the Kid. Across from it was, hey, fellows, would you rather have neat prizes or extra spending money? Here's an amazingly easy plan that gives you both. Sell grit. I only thought, I think I've only seen one actual physical copy of Grit. And it was actually on a newsstand. I don't remember where, though. And I was like, hey, I should buy that and just read it. And I never did. I wish I had. Underneath that, help save the Beatles. The group has split. Have them together forever on professional Super 8 or 8mm film for all Beatle home projectors. This may be your last chance. 100-foot, they call them 100-footers, live at Shea Stadium, New Look Beatles, Beatles at the Hollywood Bowl, and then, of course, there's Rolling Stone faves. Just some of the stuff they were advertising, just amazing. I mean, if I was a time traveler, that would be something I'd go back. Okay, I'm going to go send away for these obviously highly illegal Beatle bootlegs. Because they just movie by. So some guy must have had their 8mm camera and was just filming it. One of the stories that I read that was actually kind of interesting was Apache Red in The Fury of Fighting Fox. And it starts out where, you know, the redheaded white man is fist fighting the one of the natives. you know, it starts out, he rode into the Indian village. Apache Red wanted only a hot meal, some kind words, and a place to sleep. But now he's fighting the Comanche war chief. And they call him half white for a reason. And of course, they very, very much so didn't like him. When he gets back, they're not, I'm not sure how this, it seems like, it's just weird. What happened was, is the reason why the chief was such a bitch was because his tooth hurt. And so Apache Red came in and kidnapped him and brought him to Painless Powell Dentist, where he had his teeth pulled. The next time he was in there, he asked, "Do you still want to kill me?" And he said, "No, Apache Red, I ask you to be my brother to me." So there's always these twist endings. There was a Cheyenne kid story, which was largely forgettable. They always have the printed section, which was Doc Holliday's and Brains Better. And the center spread was all 14 of these hit records for $286. Let's see some of the choices you have. Black Sabbath, Masters of Reality, Mountain Climbing by Mississippi Queen, James Taylor, Sweet Baby, Donny Osmond, To You With Love, young Donny Osmond, Partridge Family, Three Dog Night, Sly and the Family Stone, Bob Dylan. Did you ever do one of those record clubs, Corey?
Of course. Didn't we all?
Yeah, and then you find out, yeah, you got the original hit for 14, but then you had to buy these other ones at like twice what you could buy them at Kmart.
See, I didn't have that because, you know, I would buy the albums through the record club because the nearest record store was an hour away.
Yeah.
And so for me, it was, oh, here's how I can get this record. Here's how I can get this record. The biggest problem was the limited selection because it was only people who were on, you know, certain labels who were through the Columbia Record Club or whatever.
Yeah, this was Columbia.
So it's like, well, I want to pick up the Beatles albums I don't have. But no, they don't have that.
Got it.
But you could get KC and the Sunshine Band.
I always found when I had mine, I always just bought the best of, even if I hadn't heard the group, because then half the time when I did listen to them, I'd be like, oh my gosh, I heard this on the radio. Because back in the 70s, 80s, and even today, they rarely backsell. So the story that I loved, it was still Joe Gill wrote it. Sam O'Kim did the art. It was really good art. A lot of backgrounds on this. The Rescuer. Apparently somebody snuck into the native village and stole Skyfawn, who was the young woman that was now old enough to be married. And I think it was Running Bull grabbed her and ran away. And then, of course, the trying to find the name of the guy. Oh, no, this was the Cheyenne kid. He goes off to find her. And, of course, he does catch up with them and they fight. And as they're fighting, the maiden's going, "Let me go, Running Bull, please untie me." And, you know, the fight goes both ways. And meanwhile, she keeps crying, "No, let me go. Cut me loose free. Please, cousin, untie my hands." And so the kid wins. Bull loves, falls down. And he goes, "I loved you, Skyfawn. For now, my dream has ended." And then the young woman pulls the kid's gun and says, "It is not against my will I was taking. I wish to marry Running Bull. I will shoot if you try to stop us." Huh? So here, it was just a couple story where the two wanted to get married and for whatever reason they didn't. And as the two couples rode off on the horse, he said, "Follow us to the village. We want you at our wedding feast." And I was reading this and I'm like, huh, I don't know. I did not see that coming. I should have, because I was trying to think of how they were going to end this, because again, this was a code approved comic. Neither are going to kill the other one. And if he doesn't kill him, he's just going to go after the girl again. Well, and then you wonder how, I don't know. how convoluted the whole story was after I think about it. But it was fun to read. Thought it was fairly sharp. Like I said, half the fun with reading these things and marveling at the 20-cent price is just looking at the ads for the time. Did you find what you were looking for, Corey?
Yes, I did. They did publish a few comics until Harvey went out of business in 94. And the interesting thing is, when I read up on the history, it says it is unknown whether the Harvey went out of business because of poor sales or because the founder, Arthur Harvey, passed away.
Interesting, because I think when were those published?
93 and 94.
Okay.
And I do not remember them at all. And I also find it fascinating that Turner, which was part of Warner Brothers at that point, said, nah, we're not going to have DC publish those. We're going to go to Harvey and publish them. One other weird thing, as I'm reading this fan history of Harvey. Well, actually, it's a Hanna-Barbera, this big Hanna-Barbera fan thing. It goes into incredible detail about Hanna-Barbera. But when it talks about Harvey Comics, it then says, after Harvey went out of business, they sold all their characters to Marvel Comics. No, they didn't.
No. No, least.
License. Marvel published a couple of books and they didn't sell. So Harvey, there is a corporate entity that still owns the characters, which is why we recently had a Richie Rich Netflix series, which I didn't watch, the Casper movies. And now that stuff is being published by American Mythology, which also publishes Zorro comics, and they basically do they do those, and then they do horror books. And the editor in chief of American Mythology is, I believe, Mike Wolfer, who did the adult horror comic in the 90s, Widow, which was a comic where the main female character was, you know, like a Black Widow, had some spider stuff, but mostly she just took her clothes off. The next deep cut I have is a book that I found on one of our excursions, and I want to talk about the history of it. And it's a book I do not remember seeing at the time, and I wish now that I would have. Or I would have known about it in the 80s when this stuff was probably moldering in quarter bins. Mighty Marvel Western. Mighty Marvel Western was a reprint series, double size, that would reprint Marvel's Western Heroes. I was able to get the third issue, which is Rawhide Kid, Kid Colt, and Two Gun Kid. And all but, I think, Wyatt Earp during the Marvel Westerns were kids. You know, Two Gun Kid, Kid Colt, Rawhide Kid. Who were some of the others they had? Well, there was Matt Slade, Gunfighter. But it reprints stuff from the late 50s, early 60s. Leaning very, very hard on the Jack Kirby, Dick Ayers stuff. What I did not know was that the comic lasted 46 issues from 1968 to 1976. And was during the time Marvel also still was printing Two Gun Kid. And when the Two Gun Kid was canceled, how did they try to revive the book, Joe?
Two Gun Kid?
Yep, Two Gun Kid was canceled in 75. How did they try to revive the book?
Did they throw him into the Avengers?
Yes.
Hey, I got one right.
They threw him into the Avengers. They did a time travel story with Kang. And Two Gun Kid and Hawkeye became good friends, and Hawkeye decided he would stay in the Old West. And what Steve Englehart had pitched was that they would do a series of Hawkeye and the Toucan Kid in the past, kind of fighting, not really supervillains, but proto-supervillains. And it did not sell. The idea did not sell. So eventually they brought Toucan Kid to the future with Hawkeye, where he didn't stay very long and went back to his own time period. But would you have bought? Well, you started in 78, right? You started buying comics in 78.
Yep.
So when you were a kid, would you have bought Hawkeye Toucan Kid?
Would you have gone
as a Western? I don't care.
You know, it's hard to say because you remember when I got Millie the Model comics, my mom brought them home. And they were Marvel comics. And then when I found out she showed up in Defenders, I was interested. But I don't know if I'd have gone that route when I first started, because I was probably more into the superhero thing. I didn't get into Avengers till issue 200. So I probably would have been a while until I got around to doing it. If Hawkeye was in Toucan Kid, yeah, I would have definitely bought it. But being just because it's a crossover like that, I can't see my 12-year-old self doing it. You know, I might have if that was the only thing on the shelf that week. I go, oh, well, he's an Avenger now. Maybe I'll read that. But I might have looked at it and realized, oh, this really has nothing to do with Avengers. But he is an Avenger, so maybe I should buy it just because he is in Avengers.
Well, what it is a comic was canceled in 77, but it had been a reprint book for a while. And one of the things they did, they brought him into the Avengers to try and see if there were people interested, and they would have turned Toucan Kid into Hawkeye the Toucan Kid. But that didn't work out. He went back to, he was brought to the future to wander America alongside Hawkeye. He eventually returned to his own time, occasionally making a cameo appearance in other Western tales and stories of time travel. She-Hulk, after dealing with the Time Variance Authority, is given the chance to free one time-traveling adventure out of continuity limbo. She chooses the Toucan Kid and clarified that his heroic nature prevents him from being returned to his own time, as he would eventually try to fix things. In the present time, he learns that his previous modern-day encounters with the Avengers had resulted in his law license and other paraphernalia being kept in the Avengers safe deposit box. And he worked for, once he learns that She-Hulk works for a law firm, he tries to become her colleague. He comes to the conclusion he will never be able to catch up on current laws, becomes a bounty hunter. For a time, he rooms with the awesome android, who has returned and is an employee of the same firm. This is the Dan Slott She-Hulk series. During the company crossover arc Civil War, he became a bounty hunter, worked alongside She-Hulk, helping her apprehend supervillains. And it looks like he is still in the modern era.
Forgotten. Living in the suburbs somewhere, some place Oklahoma, there was this big rock hovering in the sky, and when the rock fell, he happened to be under it.
There was also a miniseries that John Ostrander did. What was the name of that thing? Oh, Blaze of Glory. Blaze of Glory was done by John Ostrander and Leonard Manko, where they basically did the it was supposed to be the last story of all the Western heroes at Marvel. And that one's really good. Ostrander did a couple of those.
I think that story. Oh, go ahead.
What is the other Western that John Ostrander did that tied in with a modern superhero continuity over at DC?
Oh, in DC?
Yeah.
I couldn't even tell you. I know literally nothing about DC Westerns.
You should pick it up because it's The Kents. And it's about the family of the, you know, the Superman's ancestors, well, adoptive ancestors of the Old West.
You know, I did read it, and I obviously it didn't stick with me. So
beautiful art in that thing, too, by Tim Truman.
Yeah.
Tim Truman needs to draw more comics, by the way. But then again, you know what Tim Truman does for the most part now? He works for the Grateful Dead. And I bet they pay a lot better in comic books.
Unless they pay him in comic books.
Or they pay him in weed.
Yeah.
Because it is the Grateful Dead. So there I went down a little rabbit hole. You got another obscure book to talk about, Joe?
I do. Let's see. I'm going to give you I'll give you a couple hints, and then you can tell me how it all ties together. Let's start out with Slave Maker, Mask of the Spider, Adventures of Gulliver, Arabian Nights, and The Three Musketeers. What do they all have in common?
Marvel Classics comics.
Not in this case.
Oh.
In this case, I'm thinking the High Adventure Heroes, published by Gold Key in 1969.
Oh, they're grabbing a bunch of public domain characters to make a superhero team.
Well, at worst, they were actually part of Hanna-Barbera's stuff. Whereas
Of
Hanna-Barbera's stuff was well-known funny animals, this series focused on, like you said, public domain or just, you know, microventure was probably just made up. Atomic Avenue thinks these are the least known characters in the Hanna-Barbera's roster. They barely made an impression in their animated form and were all canceled within a season or two. When I Google it, all you see are offers for the two-issue series that Gold Key did publish. I have number one. And it's not anything to remember. I'm having more fun just looking at the ads. Like when you open up the inside, for 25 cents, Corey, you could have been an official charter member of the Kellogg's Banana Splits Club and gotten a print, certificate, a patch, a four-colored autograph club picture, a secret club decoder ring, official pennant, a booklet. Man, they get a lot for 25 cents. If you look at the back cover, they're still trying to help us kids make money. In this case, it's with fast-selling American seeds. Or in the inside, you could win up to a $1,000 scholarship fund and get prizes you want at no cost by selling ISCA greeting cards, which is something I actually sent the postage paid little thing in, which means I cut off a cover on one of my comics. And when I got the box, I was all ready to do it. My mom saw the box, turned around, sent it back. So I never even got a chance to try.
I sent in for that, and no one wanted the cards.
No. Yeah, they were terrible.
Of course, I only knew my family. And they're like, no, we're not buying cards from you.
See, I had gone door to door selling stuff for the parochial school I went to. So I, you know, wreaths, Boy Scout wreaths, chocolate.
If I tried to go door to door, the nearest house was a half mile away.
Yeah, no,
and
I was
after that was my grandmother's house. So
now,
we lived in the middle of nowhere.
You could have sent in a dollar to grow amazing live sea monkeys, which I remember sending in a dollar, but I never did do anything with it because you were supposed to have a packet of the amazing growth serum, and so I never did. I just put them in somewhere, and I'm sure my mom eventually sold them out. What the hell, sea monkeys? Well, we're not opening that.
Or, you know, she fed them to fish.
Oh, no, we didn't have any
fried fish. Shrimp are pretty much just shrimp.
Yeah. No, we didn't have any fish. In the middle is the Gold Key Club News, which has all the comics listed. And I'll go ahead and list. I'll just read these off. These are the comics as of March 1969, you could have bought off a newsstand from Gold Key. Daffy Duck, Bugs Bunny, Top Cat, Three Stooges, Little Lulu, Moby Duck, Donald Duck, Super Goof.
Oh, I vaguely remember Moby Duck.
Yeah.
Never showed up in any cartoons, though, did he?
If he did, he was just some, I think it was a Disney.
Yeah, it was a Disney character, but I don't think he showed up in any cartoons. It was like Super Goof in that it was created for the comics.
Yeah, the other ones are, well, there's Walt Disney's Comic and Stories, which I think is still being published by IDW today under its original numbering. Banana Splits, Quick Draw McDraw. Now, for you adventure guys, Boris Karloff, Tales of Mystery. Star Trek, Walt Disney, The Love Bug Movie. Voyage to Bottom of the Sea, Land of the Giants, The Twilight Zone, and Lancer. They also had ads for Ripley's Believe It or Not, True Ghost Stories, Curse of the Four, The Gray Angel, Treasure of the Coast Queen, and Phantom Pallbearers. Actually, those are Believe It or Not. So, let's see. Open it up. There's a couple readers page animals that you could cut out. And somebody, Mark Simmet from New Ulm, Minnesota, his drawing of a dolphin got published. So congratulations, Mark.
I have information on Moby Duck.
Okay.
He first appeared in a comic story, Whale of an Adventure, where he rescues Daffy Duck, whose inflatable water mattress has drifted out to sea. He then made his animated debut on the Walt Disney Wonderful World of Color episode, Pacifically Peaking, where he was voiced by Paul Frees, whose Disney role notably included Donald's uncle Ludwig van Drake. Moby's popularity skyrocketed from there. I don't think you could say it.
Last
skyrocketed because go ahead and look. The appearances are pretty limited here.
Yeah. let's see what else in this the Gold Club Key. As he learned the ancient secrets of growing miniature trees from Zest Stabs. And of course, my favorite part of the Gold Key Club comics, jokes on you, Corey. Why are horses so hard to get along with?
I don't know.
Say nay. How many balls of string would it take to reach the moon? Just one, but it'd have to be a big one. What did the elephant say to the ant? I have a terrible crush on you. You know, there's like about 20 of these. You want me to keep going?
Jeb Bush likes them, but I don't think anybody else does.
Oh, I was going to tell you, what did Tennessee? Same thing that Arkansas.
I don't know, Alaska. My last obscure one is a comic that's not out yet.
Uh-oh. Can't get more obscure than that.
They have announced an omnibus that I think will not sell very well, but to the people who are interested in it, we're going to be just giddy about it. Joe, have you heard about Marvel, August 1961, Omnibus?
Have they done Omnibuses on different dates?
No.
Okay. No, I think I've heard about it, but it's not something, like you said, I'd be interested in.
This is an Omnibus coming out that will have a complete hardcover collection of every issue that shared the shelves with Fantastic Four number one. And when it was first talked about, it was all the comics that came out in August of 61. And I saw the listing and went, no, because Marvel was limited to 8 books. So these are basically it's the July and August comics that came out. And the other thing is, even though it says August, comics were usually about 3 to 4 months behind the date on the cover. They would put a date on the cover Why did they put a date on the cover that was so far in advance, Joe?
I think that's to tell the newsstand guys when to pull it.
Well, that was when they wanted them to pull it. And it had started with, you know, a month ahead, because the comic would come out, pull this one when the next one comes out. But then it's starting in the later 40s and 50s. Companies would move it ahead a little more and a little more and a little more. And by this point, Marvel was either 3 or 4 months to try and keep that book on the shelf for 3 to 4 months rather than to take it down when the next one came out. Which they actually corrected in the 90s. DC had the month on the cover, and then eventually they just, I forget, they did 2 months where they didn't have the month on the cover because they wanted to change it so that the month on the cover was the month that came out. Marvel kind of did the same thing where they didn't put the month on the cover. Now, no one cares.
Yeah.
I don't think they put the month on the cover of anything.
No, if anything, having a comic book, a virgin comic cover, is actually one of the big variants that people love to buy.
But here are the books that they're going to have in this omnibus. And it shows kind of what Marvel was putting out with the Fantastic Four hit. Journey into Mystery, 73 and 74, which were the monster titles. Kathy, number 13, which was a soap opera-ish girly comic. Life with Millie, which was a soap opera Millie the Model comic. Patsy Walker, which was also kind of a soap opera comic. Amazing Adventures, number 6, which Joe has, and I believe, I'm going to take a look, but I believe that's the first appearance of Dr. Droom.
Droom.
Adventures 6. Was it all just still monster stories? Yep, it was all just still monster stories. No Dr. Droom yet. The monster was S-S-E-R-P-O, Serpico, the creature that crushed the world. He's still growing. Nothing can stop him. By tomorrow, his weight will crush the entire planet. Earth is doomed.
Doomed.
Let's see. Kid Cole Outlaw, number 101. Linda Carter, student nurse. Linda Carter, huh? Interesting. Millie the Model, 105. Strange Tales, number 90. Tales of Suspense, number 23. Strange Tales, Tales of Suspense, and Tales to Astonish, number 25. All monster comics. Gunsmoke Western, number 67. Not an adaptation of Gunsmoke, but boy, they sure like using that title so that people would think it would be. Love Romances, number 96. Teenage Romance, number 84. Amazing Adult Fantasy, number 7. So, I think Amazing Adult Fantasy was when it became just Lee and Kirby. So, it went from Amazing Adventures to Amazing Adult Fantasy. Yep, that is the first of the Lee Ditko, where the magazine that respects your intelligence. And Patsy and Hetty, number 79, another Patsy Walker comic. Hetty was her best friend. And then finally, Rawhide Kid, number 25. So most of those have never been reprinted before. Marvel has done next to no reprints of their romance stuff. And very few reprints of the Westerns. I think the only Westerns they've reprinted are the Rawhide Kid stuff. And they did a Rawhide Kid Essential. And then a couple of Rawhide Kid Masterworks. But no real demand for the romance comics. You know who does have a lot of demand, Joe?
I will also mention, if you're a speculator, that might be an omnibus to pick up. Yeah, just like the Kirby romance one, I really don't see them doing another one. That's been one of the beefs in the omnibus buyers, is that a lot of people will buy them, not necessarily because they want them or they want to read them, but because the value of them goes up pretty well up until recently. Now Marvel just says, hey, there's a demand for it, let's reprint it. And nothing kills the demand or the speculator price more than a reprint.
Oh, when we do the next previews, Marvel is reprinting a metric shelf load of omnibuses.
Yeah, I was hearing
crazy.
That. Well, they are offering a little overtime at work, so I suppose.
So for us to kind of afford some of these omnibuses, you should listen to these guys, our sponsors. Believe it or not, kids, this here podcast has sponsors. And that sponsor, since day one, is DreamHost.com. DreamHost.com is the best, bar none, web host in the whole known universe. And if you need a website, head on over to DreamHost.com, put in code CRAZY, that's K-R-A-Y-Z, and get $20 off your first year. Now, if you would like to advertise here on any of the Solitaire Rose Network podcasts, you can. Just email me at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com, subject advertising. Also, head on over to eBay and look for user Crazy, K-R-A-Y-Z. That's Joe, Crazy Writer, who's always telling us about the eBay in every episode of Crazy Comics and Stories. If you would like to contact us, you can do so. You can give us a call at 952-856-0519. Leave a message and we'll play it on the show. Or you can send us an email at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com. Thanks. And if that's not enough, I do other podcasts. I every week over at pwinsiderelite.com, I do a podcast with Anthony Pyrus, who listens to the show, even though he's not a comic fan. So what the hell is going on in his mind? But I do all of these other podcasts. The Solitaire Rose Radio Network is currently on a pause, basically because COVID-19 has made it so that I have to work a lot of extra hours at both jobs. But you can still go and listen to my other podcasts. Now, you're probably listening to Crazy Comics and Stories, which is the main podcast. But on this same feed, K-R-A-Y-Z-C-O-M-I-X, is Solitaire Rose Radio, the solo radio podcast that I do. I've done interviews, I've done short stories, I've done all sorts of things, and you can get to it right here on this same feed. I also do a podcast called Novelcast, where I take the novels I've written and turn them into free audiobooks. That's over at novels.solitairerose.com. Dangerous Dan Moore and I, and of course Wolfie B. Bad, give you bad advice over at badadvice.solitairerose.com. You send in your questions, and we give you the aforementioned bad advice. And then myself and Adam Vermillion from For the Love of Comics do the Fantastic Forecast at fantasticforecast.solitairerose.com, where we go through the issues of the Fantastic Four issues at a time to give the plot and commentary on each issue. That's not all. Yes, I'm crazy. I still, over at pwinsiderelite.com, every week on Wednesday, do a recap of the latest episode of AEW Dynamite. I write up what happened, and then myself and Anthony Pyrus, we'll do an audio. Now, you can only listen to the audio if you're a member at pwinsiderelite.com, and if you're a wrestling fan, you should be, where we then break down the episode, talk about what we liked, what we didn't like, give it a grade, and let you know if you should have watched that episode. Those are the other podcasts here at the Solitaire Rose Radio Network. Thanks. And Joe isn't just sitting around on his butt, eating those bonbons, watching the Oprah. Joe, what's going on the eBays?
Oh, quite a lot. Let's see. From last week, let's see. I mentioned a couple titles here. I sold a copy of Transformers Unicorn. I'm sorry. I mumbled, fumbled that. Saw it again. So, since last week, been selling a lot of different books. First one, Transformers Unicron, number one. This was the Black and White Diamond exclusive variant cover. Of course, mine was the cheapest on the eBays. That was the final miniseries that ended IDW's first run with Transformers, and then they're still publishing stuff. I just don't really pay attention because I'm not really sure what's going on with this. I almost sold a run of Avengers World 1 through 14. I say almost because when I went to sell it, I noticed there was a discrepancy between the picture, which was correct, and the description, which was wrong. So I emailed the guy and said, hey, before I send this, he wanted a complete run. Mine had a few holes in it. So we decided not to go through with the sale, which I think is only fair because, you know, I'm sure he bought it just thinking, oh, that's a pretty good price for a run. But to me, run just means from this to there. It's not a complete run, which is the more key thing. As for the title, even though Jonathan Hickman wrote it, I obviously didn't really care for it because I picked it up sporadically until I realized I'm not going to pick it up at all. I guess I just didn't understand how it tied in the original Avengers, or if it was supposed to be a tie-in to the Disney series or what the deal was. I guess it does have some stories in it. And of course there's a tons of variants, but there was just one I didn't read, didn't buy. Well, I did buy, but didn't quite catch it. Corey, have we ever talked about Cages?
Yes.
Dave McLean.
Yes. Beautiful McKean. Book.
Sorry.
Beautiful Spoiler. Book.
Yep. I had a couple. I actually have a hardcover of his. I think we bought it. Did I find it? I think I found it at half price. And so I've been selling off the various issues. And all the issues are magazine size. There's 10 copies. First published by Kitchen Sink. Was Tundra part of that?
Yes, it started at Tundra. A lot of things started at Tundra and didn't end. From Hell started at Tundra.
Yeah.
Joe?
So there are...
What was Tundra?
Tundra was Peter Laird's. Is that how you pronounce his name?
Yes.
Hey, I got one right. Why should I start now? I've butchered everybody else all podcast. But... what he did with his Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle monies, as he was one of the co-creators, is he founded this company, which the best analogy I can think of is it was like Beatles Apple, where everything, just come on in, I'll give you the money so you can concentrate less on sales and just publish what you want, and we'll have some fun, and we'll make some good art. And a lot of stuff came out, a lot of stuff didn't. Some people just took the money and never produced anything. And it kind of flopped on itself. Of course, Dennis Kitchen of Kitchen Sink, being a comic fan in and of his own right, took certain properties that he really wanted to see published and published them. And he finished up Cages. I'm looking here. There are different books. I got the hardcover book, which had the whole series, which is really beautiful. Dark Horse did a couple editions. I imagine Tundra might have done one. I'll just read the description. In some ways, this series is about cages we build for ourselves as seen in the lives of people who occupy a city apartment building. One man in particular, a reclusive writer who lives upstairs, has built the tightest cage of them all. 2 years ago, he channeled all the pain and grief in his life into a book critical of religion and its effect on people. That book was called Cages. The author was Jonathan Rush. And much like real-life author Salman Rushdie, he was attacked by religious zealots. To this day, book burnings of Cages, not the real comic in our world, but the book in the fictional world, are still held, and Rush is forced to live his life as a fugitive. But just as a caged bird is said to sing the most sweetly, his pain and that of other residents are seen here in a poignant beauty. And Dave McKean, of course, wrote and drew the entire thing. So one to definitely look out for. Like I said, I've sold off all my magazine size covers, the last one on the eBays. We were talking Hanna-Barbera a lot today. Well, Abbott and Costello, the famed comedy team, had an animated series, and it was published by Carlton Comics. So you can get it. I guess that the interesting thing about the comic book is that the two stars in their television act were often break the fourth wall. Well, for them, they were talking to the audience. For us, they're talking to the reader. So Let's see. We're talking first issue was in 1968, last issue 1977. They're upward in price, but like most comics of that era, nobody was saving them like we're saving them now to keep in mint shape in case they become $300-$400 comics. I never read it. Avengers Standoff, Assault on Pleasant Hill. I don't know what it dealt with. I think what it was is I had a variant cover, and it might have been one that I sold off for the MCBA's charity auction. So did you ever read Standoff, Corey?
Yes.
Well, can you give us a synopsis?
Standoff. Wasn't that the one where S.H.I.E.L.D. had created this town and were using a cosmic cube to kind of wipe villains and put them in this very 50s-esque town? And then things start to fall apart because the cosmic cube, they've kind of established that cosmic cubes are actually beings. And this one was a very young being that wasn't getting things right. And for those people who got mad about the Cap turns out to be working for Hydra, that's where this started. This is where they planted all the seeds for that. And the problem was people just read the Cap is part of Hydra without knowing it was tying into that and got mad about it.
Yeah.
Rather than, like, if you're following these threads through all these books, it leads up to this. And because in the past, when they'd done that, this leads to this, leads to this, leads to this, people always went, oh, cool. Well, this is the one time where people didn't follow the thread and just got mad.
Yeah. Yeah. And then my favorite was when people brought up like Captain America photos of the time the Red Skull tricked him into being.
So no, like, the Red Skull, he and the Red Skull switched bodies.
He's like, what do you mean Kirby would hate it? Kirby drew about it. So,
That was a different story. That was a story back in the 50s where Cap was brainwashed by the Red Skull to join the Germans during World War II. Yeah, but there was also a story that Gene Colan did where Stan Lee and Gene Colan did a story where Captain America and the Red Skull switched bodies. So there have been tons of stories where Cap becomes a Nazi. It's kind of it's an old trope where something happens and you work for the villains. And every adventure story ever has done that. Especially, you go back and you watch 60s and 70s TV shows, there were times like it would happen like at least twice a season. But I've actually went back and reread the whole thing about a year ago, and it really works.
Oh, yeah, I enjoyed it.
And the thing is, the twist at the end wasn't what I thought it was. I thought they were going in one direction. It's like, nope, we're going over here. And it's one of the few times reading a comic where I actually got very surprised.
Which is hard to do for old farts like us that have been listening to stuff. I've got more stuff going up on eBay's. I do every day. So if you want to, you know, take a look. I've always got something extra for listeners of the show. So just send me a note. And like I say all the time, if you have something you want to deal in, just send me a note through the eBay system. And who knows, I may give you a better deal than what you asked. K-R-E-Y-Z. Hey, come get some.
And now we get to my favorite part of the show. No, not where I go out to a mall and whip shitties in the parking lot because the roads are slick as snail snot.
Yeah, we had another snowstorm come through. Was it 12 hours of just light, fluffy snow? Ended up being about 12 inches?
Yeah. No, it's Freaking a Geeky Joe. What you freaking on?
I used to play a game called Wild Frontier. It's one of those online games where it's basically Western battles. I pretty much stopped. I get so tired. You got these guys who, you know, either by time or cheat codes, are just way up there in value. You know, they just come around and they just pray. Nobody gets a chance to grow or even get to be that big because they're busy knocking everybody down. And the developers don't care because, you know, what do they care? You're not getting my money anymore, though, so maybe you should. I did find one which I have yet to spend money on, but I'll save that for the geeking side of things. Other things freaking on me. I mentioned I had my TSA tests, 5 tests taken sequentially. I got the first 3 right, and then I didn't pass the 4th one. So I got to go back and do it. But what's really freaked me out is I'm suffering from a bout with my rheumatoid arthritis that is almost, it's number 3 on the list. Number 1 in terms of absolute pain. And I'm not talking pain, you know, what's scale 1 to 10? I'm talking it's a 15. I'm talking, and I'm not, so don't worry about it, but this is suicide level pain where I just think of people who have to live with this level of pain and why they commit suicide and why they would become addicted to opiates and things like that just to have this pain. We as a society suck at dealing with pain. You know, it's always funny when a doctor comes up to me, well, what's your pain level between 0 and 10? And it's like, well, I live with a 1 or 2 every single day. It's just a state of my being. It's just the way it is. And there are people that do that constantly. And you can't tell because it's just like a mental pain, a mental anguish. You look normal. And it's just something that you got to live with, something you deal with. Every so often, though, the RA kicks in and tells me it is going to rule me. I mean, my first RA symptoms were way back in 2003. When I first started TSA and we're lifting 80-pound bags and we're screening them and everything. And I just started swelling up. And I thought, well, I've been sitting basically for 10 years on my ass not doing anything because I just did the comic store. I mean, yeah, I was doing stuff, but 90% of it was sitting around waiting for people to come in the store. Not a lot of physical activity. Halfway through that, I found out I had diabetes. And Corey can attest, I actually did something about it and lost about 30 pounds. So now, until I got diagnosed correctly, that was like 6 months of real hardcore pain. That was number 2. Number 1 was the 6 months I dealt with my hip before we figured out what it was and going forward into the operation, knowing I still had 3 months to go. Well, this is number 3. I mean, I haven't slept. My voice is crackly. It's not the normal come get some you're all used to. I'm tired. My joints are achy. And I'm talking pretty much everything except my hips because they're artificial. And it just sucks because I got to go back. Tomorrow I've got more TSA training, which means I got to get up early, which itself is a pain because where normally it would take me like 10, 20 minutes to get ready, it takes me an hour now because I can't lift my arms over my head and I can't do the normal things you take for granted, like even lifting a glass of water. My shoulders are like, just like a creaky door. And I know it's going to get better. I have a doctor's appointment set up for Thursday. And they'll readjust the meds. The problem is the meds aren't instantaneous. You have a headache here, take this med for hopefully 4 or 5 minutes later, you're feeling better. It's going to take a couple weeks for this to subside. And in between that, now I've also got TSA like, hey, Joe, you got to finish your test. It's like, well, I can't really do what you want me to do until this subsides. I have no idea how they're going to react to that. Maybe they'll fire me. How many times in the past have I been on the cups of being fired? Oh, well, it's all there. So I'm kind of freaking on that. I mean, today I do feel a little better. I'm sitting upright in the chair. I don't feel pain as bad. I mean, my joints are creaky, but it just sucks, you know. So, and I see that on Facebook every so often, you know, people who have pain and just hide it. I'm one of those people. So whatever you do, pray to your God, eat your cherry pie, just eat it, pray a little harder, say a little bit more for me because I'm just not feeling the greatest. And that's pretty much it for freaking, because after that, there's nothing else to freak about. Corey, what you freaking on? What's got you down in the dumps?
Joe, it's time for Hanging at the Home.
All right. I love hanging at the home.
These are tales of me working at group homes. Last night, we got snow here in Minnesota.
I'm shocked.
And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a blizzard. It wasn't anything like that. It was just a very slow, steady snow. And I was working at one of the houses I don't normally work at because they were incredibly shorthanded and offered me a $10 an hour bonus if I would do so. So I actually left a little early because it was starting to snow at around 2:30. So I left a little early, stopped at the gas station to get my soda and get everything I need, because after that shift at that house, I would have to drive to the house I normally work at. And because I've worked in a different house, I now need to wear full PPE whenever I work for 2 weeks. Except when I'm sleeping, I don't have to wear the full PPE when I sleep. Good thing is the shifts I've taken are all sleep shifts. And I won't take any awake shifts until the 2 weeks is over. But I get there, and I had not been in that house since last summer. One of the clients who lived there had passed away in October. There was a new client there. And I introduced myself and sat with her for a while to find out the kind of things she likes, kind of things she likes to do. And then one of the other clients who, you know, this is a house where everybody's nonverbal. The new client is verbal. She doesn't talk much, but she's able to talk. One of the clients who used to be a guy who, if you turned your back, he would be up and walking and trying to get outside and get in your car. Well, he doesn't walk much anymore. After his COVID infection, he needs oxygen all the time because his lungs haven't completely come back. So really, there's not a lot there to do other than just kind of hang out with people. You don't have to do a lot of physical therapy. You don't have to do a lot of this. And was just kind of hanging out. I'd gotten everybody their supper, and the other staff not really talking a whole lot. And then 7 o'clock, she hands me the phone without telling me why, without telling me anything that's going on. Hello? And it was the nurse, and the nurse said, well, Corey, you know that these meds are missing. No. Well, this person doesn't have any meds, so you're going to need to drive out here and pick up meds from the pharmacy. You'll talk to Ryan and et cetera, et cetera. And it was very much felt like I'd just been thrown in the deep end of the pool. And I said, okay, which pharmacy? Okay, I've got Ryan's number. Who's Ryan? And I was not looking forward to being out in the snow, but had to go. And normally it's a half hour drive out to from St. Louis Park to Waconia. Well, as I get out on the road, things are slow and I figure, oh, it's going to be a while. That's OK. I've got stuff to listen to. And then after I get out of the Twin Cities, you know, you've got that the 94 loop where the city is kind of surrounded by 94 goes through. So you've got 694, which on the north side goes around, and 494, which goes around on the south side. Once I got outside that, they had not plowed anything. And the further out I go, the less they had plowed, and the more things are flat. And I swear the last 5-10 miles to Waconia, I have no idea if I was on the road or not. No idea if I was on the right side of the road or not. Because they hadn't plowed anything. It was just white, just snow. So I'm driving. This is normally, you know, it's normally 55. I'm driving about 30. And I get to the pharmacy, and there are no lights on anywhere. So I dig through. I've got this Ryan's phone number, and I call, and I go, am I at the right place? He's like, yeah, I can see you. We're open. But, you know, it's after hours, so I go up, and they hand me 2 big grocery bags of meds. And all I could think is, wow, the new client takes a lot of meds. And I get back in, it's an hour back. Thankfully, by the time I got to like Chanhassen, they'd started plowing and traffic was really slow, but I could actually see the road. So I wasn't ditch banging. I get back and it's after I'm supposed to leave. That's how bad the roads were. It took me over 2 hours to make this drive and back. And I get back and it's like, Corey, you need to put these meds away. I haven't worked in this house for 8 months. I don't know anybody's meds. And they've given us 2 months worth of medication. So I'm putting this stuff away. And then, and before you leave, put client A to bed. And I'm looking and it's like, it's already like 20 minutes past when I clock out. And it really felt like the whole shift, the other staff was just like, oh, thank God, somebody's here. I can make him do everything. So I take care of that. Get in my car, go to the other house. I get there. This is the house I'm normally in. The roads are a little better by the time I get there. I get there, you know, I'm there barely in time. The other staff leaves and I look. They didn't clean up anything after supper. They didn't take any of the garbage out. I'm supposed to just show up, empty the dishwasher, and go to sleep. No, I was up for an hour cleaning after that. So it was very much a pair of shifts where not only did I have white knuckle driving for 2 hours, but also it's like, oh, Corey's here. We'll just dump everything on him. And then I get home today at about 9 o'clock. Corey, can you come in and work at the other house? You know, the one where I'd been, where I had to drive. You know, sorry, I'm busy today. I didn't say I was busy talking to Joe. I just said, I can't. I have no comics geeking. I mean, I have no comics freaking. So, Joe, what are you geeking on?
I don't have a lot to geek on because much as Rheumatoid's been kicking my ass, I don't really geek much. I did download a new game, and some of you might have seen it. It's called Marvel's Puzzle Quest. Basically, it's kind of a Bejeweled.
I feel bad for Bejeweled because I remember Bejeweled was huge.
And oh, yeah.
Now you never hear about Bejeweled. I don't see it anywhere. But every puzzle game on my phone is a Bejeweled knockoff.
Yeah. And that's kind of what this is. And as you're fighting Dr. Doom and the Doombots, which I'm still on the first mission, you know, you match up the heroes. Cues, you fight them, there's whatever. It's mindless enough. I'd have no idea if I'm going to stick with it. Like I said, I'm on the first level. I'm having fun with it, so that's kind of fun. I did get a one Virgin comic in the mail, Amazing Spider-Man number 55, which is a Pat Gleason exclusive. He got all 250 copies, and in this case, I had him sign it for me across the bottom. This is the one that he's got the internet on its side because it's black and white, and he just drew Spider-Man in such amazing details. He did the same thing with Venom, did the same thing with Carnage. I wasn't fast enough to get those, but I was fast enough to get this, and this is really the one I want. So,
By the way, did you see that Buzz has drawn one?
Mm-mm. Oh, the one with Bernie?
Yeah, he did the Patrick Gleason thing, except he drew a Bernie Sanders out of webbing on a book for somebody.
Oh, that's brilliant. I thought I wasn't sure if that would be something for sale or just somebody did.
He drew it and somebody bought it immediately because, you know, Buzz is Buzz.
That's pretty sweet. I'm glad I didn't know it was there because I probably would have bought it. The only thing I did read, and this was before the arthritis kicked in and I couldn't concentrate, Green Lantern by Geoff Johns, book 4. And this is where they're getting into the Rage of the Red Lanterns. Stories I never read. I'm not sure where I started reading Green Lantern, or maybe I stopped, but this is the birth of the Red Lanterns, the coming of the Orange Lantern, the second rule of the Guardians. They deal with an origin story. Just phenomenal reading. And it all ties in. I think they go through Final Crisis, one book. There's like a one or two panel dealing with the crisis, which is how it should be. He was part of it, but he wasn't the key focus of it. And yeah, just a lot of fun. And of course, it leaves kind of on a cliffhanger. So now I got to wait for book five. But you know, I wonder why. You know, Marvel has been getting a lot of grief lately because of all the crossovers they're doing and the events. Most of it's stuff like what we talk about. If you're not reading Venom and all of a sudden this king of whatever is there and it's crossing over all the books and it's interfering with everything, you're kind of like, why are they doing this? Well, yeah, if you've been reading Venom, or again, the one I always use, Jason Aaron's Thor, there's a lot of buildup to the finale. You know, and in this case, I think with Geoff Johns, it goes into Brightest Day and Blackest Night, and it's all talked about in the very beginning. And they're just well-done stories, long-term stories, not like the month-to-month stuff. Kind of like what I was beefing about a few podcasts ago. About, oh, these comics aren't for me. I don't understand. It's like, well, everybody's yelling at Marvel, but I, you know, people aren't giving DC any grief about it. Of course, none of it matters anymore because of Rebirth, but or what do they call it? Future Quest? No, Zero Hour. No, ah, come on, it's on the tip of my tongue.
Infinite Crisis.
There you go. That was the finale for me. So let's see. I had the eBay fired up. I was going to share a couple non-comic things I picked up, just because every so often you go down that route. You're purchase history. Yeah. Let's see. I got, we talked about the Bee Gees documentary. And when that came out, Target had an exclusive, Greensfield Bee Gees songbook volume one, and couldn't find it anywhere. So I just bought a cheap copy off of the eBays for my wife. We had watched 9 1/2 weeks again recently. And I didn't realize it was also a book.
Yes.
So I went out and found an old library copy. 9 1/2 weeks, A Memoir of a Love Affair by Elizabeth McNeil. And, of course, the big thing about this is that apparently it's a lot more steamier than the book. So I don't know. Maybe I should wait till my rheumatoid is a little better before I get all excited.
Shall I give you a weird fact about the movie 9 1/2 weeks?
Yeah.
In the 80s, it was the most rented film by far. Because they used to track, you know, what movies are rented. That movie was rented, even though in the theaters it was a massive bomb. And the people behind it said, well, this isn't a movie you want to go sit and watch with a bunch of other people. This is a movie you want to sit and watch with someone who you're in a relationship with.
This isn't a porn theater, people.
But then they started making more after that, and then Basic Instinct, they started making those what they would call erotic thrillers. And they knew they wouldn't do that great in theaters, but they would do unbelievably well on home video. And it started a whole trend on that sort of thing. For there were a number of people who made movies like that. Zalman King, the director Zalman King, actually made his entire career doing that.
Yikes.
I think he even did a series on Showtime, Red Shoe Diaries. That was just, you know, okay, we're going to get a name actor to do kind of sex stories that aren't porn.
No porn for you.
By the way, who was the main character on the show Red Shoe Diaries?
Red Green?
David Duchovny.
Ooh, my wife probably knows that.
It was his second TV series. His first TV series, of course, was Twin Peaks.
Other than that, I got no other geeking. Corey, what you geeking on?
I am still reading that Moon Knight omnibus. Damn, that's good stuff. And one of the things that really strikes me is how amazingly clear Doug Bench was about the character really early on. And I think one of the reasons it didn't tie into the Marvel Universe much was because after they did a few comics, it went and became kind of the backup feature in the Hulk magazine. And the Hulk magazine was aimed at a different audience. If you've read it started as Rampaging Hulk, which is one of my favorite books because it's a continuity implant. It's stories that take place between Hulk number 6, which was the last issue, and when he showed up later in Tales to Astonish. And they did these stories that filled in. And then, of course, Bill Mantlow said, nah, none of those stories happened. They were all made up.
Never last.
All the stories are made up. But after they did 9 issues of that, the Hulk TV series was doing well, so the Hulk magazine went full color and had more stories that were more like the TV show, in that there weren't supervillains. It was more, you know, personal drama type stuff. And the backup, Moon Knight, very much set the tone, and it has stayed that way the whole time. Because normally when a character starts as kind of a fill-in character or backup character, they change over time. And the example I always use is Punisher. In his first few appearances, he was a contract killer. It wasn't until a couple stories in that they kind of went into the, okay, well, you know, his parents were killed by the mob and he's out to kill criminals. When he first showed up, he was just a killer for hire. The next thing I am geeking on was going down that rabbit hole on Harvey. Harvey is just, it's such an odd company its last few years. In the 70s, it was just huge. There were more Richie Rich books than Marvel, than DC books at one point. Not Harvey, just Richie Rich. And by 79 and 80, it was done. They were barely alive, kind of were on life support until 86 when they stopped publishing. Then they got the contract for the New Kids on the Block and try to come back. And the New Kids on the Block comic sold pretty well. They also had a contract for Saved by the Bell, which I didn't remember at all because I, you know, by 1990, I'm not going to be someone who's watching Saved by the Bell. And then when that fad passed, they got the Hanna-Barbera stuff and then right into the dirt. I do remember, however, that Sad Sack reverted back to the original creator, and they put out a new comic every year or two back in the 90s. So, you know, for me, diving into comic book history is always fun. But then the last thing I am geeking on, I am the DC Universe app. Joe, remember how we talked about that there was a Superman team-up book in the early 70s?
Yeah.
World's Finest. I started reading it. Oof, is that. It's not good. It's Julie Schwartz, so it's not the the goofy Mort Weisinger stuff. But there's a two-part race with the Flash, which turns into a Green Lantern story, which is so convoluted it made my head hurt by the end. Where it's okay, they've ended up in this parallel dimension, and the Phantom Zone villains have been able to escape. And if they don't, and the Green Lantern Corps gave Flash this thing, which has all the power of all the Green Lanterns, and it's, someone was trying to be Roy Thomas and failing. But they're there. It only lasted about a year or so, which is weird that it would be stuck in my head like that. And to kind of cleanse my palate, I started reading the Batgirl of Burnside story. Batgirl of Burnside was in the New 52. After a while, they handed Batgirl over to writer Cameron Stewart and artist Babs Tarr. And we reviewed it way, 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 way back when it was coming out. And First time I've reread those stories. Babstar's art is just so, it's such a breath of fresh air with all the other DC stuff, all looking like Jim Lee was telling people, you know, basically everybody was trying to be Jim Lee. And Babstar art is more animation influenced and much brighter and lighter and just pops right off the page. And the stories are, much more interesting in that it's, okay, we're going to set up Barbara Gordon as a college student again, even though she's been Oracle and she was a congresswoman and she's been this. Nope, now she's back at school. But the writer seems to actually know what goes on in colleges. The stories felt like this is a woman in her early 20s, kind of navigating through. And I've gotten to the point where, do you remember the new Batman, which was Commissioner Gordon in a set of armor?
I was aware of it. I wasn't reading it.
They treat it with all the respect it deserves. Next to
like a Deathmate reunion.
But all these are fun stories. They're just fun stories. And if you've not read them, either pick up the three trade paperbacks or go to your your DC Universe to read those. And there we go. That is what I'm geeking on. Believe it or not, kids, we've rested an hour and a half out of not knowing what the hell we were going to talk about.
Now you know the rest of the story.
And as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like the most. Joe?
Oh, no dancing for me. But Corey, hit my music.
Funk is on a roll. Funk is on a roll.
Hey, yo. Can somebody call my mama? It's about to get funky up in here. Don't say it.
Done, bitches!